Well, hello everyone, and welcome to our final group coaching call here of B2B Business Launcher 2.0. It's July 28th. It's great to be here with you guys today, and I don't really have any announcements other than to just remind you, if you have a question, how you can ask. Just simply raise your hand by dialing star 2 on your telephone keypad. That will raise your hand. I'll see it here on my dashboard. I'll go ahead and unmute you, and you can ask away. Just make sure to only dial star 2 one time, because if you do it again, it lowers your hand. So you can ask as many questions as you'd like, but just use that function one time, that command one time. Otherwise, it cancels it out. And, of course, if you're on the webcast, meaning you're listening to me through your computer speakers, then just type in your question and I'll see it over here, and I'll go back and forth between webcast and telephone. So with that, I will say that there's no one with their hand raised. So if you've been meaning to ask a question, now is your chance to be first. All right. We have Sharon down in Florida. Hey, Sharon, how are you?
Well, I'm great, Ed. I can't wait to take off for a much cooler Seattle and the Pacific Northwest in about 2 weeks, exactly.
Nice. Rub it in. Way to rub it in.
I know. It's, well, these are my trade-offs, for not for not joining into the corporate life again.
Yes.
I always have questions. And this one's pretty silly, but I'm just wondering, like, when do you, quote-unquote, cut us off from, is this our last week? I know we started April 5th. Do we go till August 5th? I know this is our last coaching call.
Yeah, God, cut us off sounds really...
I know, it's terrible, but I have not... But I'm in the academy, so I won't feel cut off, but it's just been so great having all this learning access. And I, quite frankly, I have like 4 consistent contracts, and I haven't been able to keep up. And I've done all this just through word of mouth and people knowing me and referring me. And so I haven't even gotten my website reviewed by you. So I still need to at least get my copy up there like I know one other person did. How long do I have to do that? I'm almost ready.
Yeah. No, it's a very valid question. So this weekend, so we're basically wrapping up this week. This is the last week in the forum. We're going to close out the forum. Usually Crystal closes it out the following Monday. So what is that, Monday the 1st? So you still have time to ask a few questions. In terms of web copy, you definitely want to get it to me before then.
Okay.
If you have it. just make sure it's in either
know,
if you haven't gone live. Yeah, one document. So all the instructions, make sure to follow the instructions there.
I will.
And give me a few days to get it back to you.
Of course.
And I will definitely get you some feedback. Not a problem.
Okay.
But yeah, so just figure on, look, by the weekend we're gonna close the doors. Now a couple of things as to, okay, what's next? You mentioned well, first of all, you guys are going to be moved to the B2B Business Launcher Alumni Forum next week. So you'll get an invitation. This forum will remain visible to you, but it's going to be read-only. Read-only.
Oh.
So the way to have discussions is to make sure to join that Alumni Forum and participate, because – it's a great group of people. Now, I'll tell you, just to be completely transparent, it's not a very active forum, but it's not because of lack of participation in the way of people answering questions. I find that when somebody asks a question, others come back with feedback and come to the rescue. It's just that a lot of people aren't really asking questions there. So, but it's still a great resource. So that's one one avenue that's open to you. And just to set the right expectations, I'm there occasionally, but this is not just make sure not to count on me being there answering your questions. I have to cut it off, like you said, at some point. The second thing you mentioned is the Academy, so Get Better Clients Academy. I'm going to send you guys an email soon, probably next week sometime, with some information on the Academy, what you get for that, and you'll get a pretty handsome offer on that for being an alumni of B2B Business Launcher. So that's another opportunity. The reason that's something to consider is you have an opportunity to come into a group coaching call like this every month and just ask me questions on anything you might have. So, we'll send an invitation to that.
Yeah, I think I get a lot out of that, and you know, that started not long before this B2B launcher session started. So having the two of them together was great. But as you can understand, with a lot of other regular deadlines, it's been a little difficult to perform to complete all of the instructional material from B2B launcher. And I haven't needed the website yet to find clients, but I do feel like it's pretty obvious that I need it. So I'm almost done with my Word file, and I'll be sending it to you very soon. I work best under pressure, unfortunately.
Well, in that's totally fine. And by the way, it's okay. You know, nothing to feel bad about. One last comment, though, about the web copy, and this is not necessarily for you. I just want to bring this up because this happens. Some people, when they realize, oh, yeah, I've been meaning to send web copy over, and they realize that there's a deadline, they'll just throw something together real quick just because they don't want to miss out. This fear of missing out thing, look, you're doing yourself a disservice if you're just going to throw something together just because you don't want to miss out on that benefit, because honestly, if you send me something that's just not good, I can't really work with that. So you're not going to get great feedback. So don't rush through something because you don't want to miss out on a benefit. I think you are better off taking your time and doing it right than you are sending me trash, because I'm not going to rewrite it for you. Just keep that in mind.
I've been working on mine little by little, and so I just didn't have it all completely together in one file yet. So that's what I have to do.
Okay.
Thanks.
Super. Well, no, I look forward to seeing it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and sorry, I just drank a little bit of water. I think that's going to help. I hate it when that happens. Usually I don't lose my voice, but something was going on there. All right, so I think this is Michael out in Minnesota. Is that you, Michael?
Sure is.
How are you?
Real good, Ed. How are you?
Doing well.
Yeah, I really enjoyed all of these coaching sessions and the whole program.
Excellent.
I know that.
Thank you.
I have a question about going forward, how to allocate your time. I realize it depends on where somebody is in their business. Essentially, I started from ground zero at the beginning of the year, took some initial courses through AWAI, went to a web copy intensive in Austin, Texas in March, and then started this program. And essentially what I've been doing is a lot of just outbound prospecting with warm email, but I've spent so much time doing that, I feel like that's all I'm doing. I'm doing a little inbound marketing, as you suggested, by doing some blogging, but, you know, I'm spending so much time prospecting because I'm still trying to generate, obviously, some business. How do you allocate your time going forward? considering my particular situation.
So, and you're doing this full time, right? So you're able to dedicate the full time work
much,
to
yeah,
your business.
Pretty much. Yes.
Okay.
I do a little part time work, but essentially I'm doing this at least 4 days a week, you know, full time.
Okay. Okay. And in terms of, give me an idea when you said you're doing a ton of prospecting. Just because it's all relative, right? It's give me a sense for how many warm emails are you? Do you figure you're sending out in a, let's say, in a week?
Oh, I don't know. I've done since I started 274 warm emails.
Yeah.
And so some days it's more than 10. You know, I've tried to average at least 10 a day.
Yeah.
Some days I've done more than that. Some days I've done fewer, of course, and I've had to go into different niches because some of the one niche that I first thought would generate some income for me, the insurance field, didn't right away. So I jumped in on marketing, coaching, some venture capital firms. Lately I've been doing medical device companies, you know, anything that has expensive, complicated products, to tell you the truth.
And what, I mean, have you gotten some responses?
Yes, I've gotten, two phone calls, and I have two more lined up, one next week and one the following week. Both of those are venture capitalist firms. So, yeah, I've done, that's what I've had so far. I've had two calls and two lined up.
Okay.
And I've had a number of people come back and say that that they'll keep me on a list for future, you know, future business. But at this particular time, there's not a need for my particular services.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm going to answer your question indirectly, and just bear with me because I think the best way to give you an answer is by shifting how we frame it. Let's say, and do you have kids?
No.
Okay. Let's just say that let's say that you're in a situation where you haven't eaten in a few days, and you haven't eaten because you have no money for food. Not only that,
right,
but you have you really desperately need to see a doctor, but you have no money to see a doctor. And the only way out of this is to generate a client, you know, get some work, okay? So bear with me. I know that's a really extreme situation. If you were in a situation like that, how much would you try and how much would you do?
Well, I'd try as much as I could possibly. I mean, I'd be prospecting 100% of the time.
Exactly, and I think what the problem we all have, all of us in this room, is that we have choice, right? We can choose to do less. And by the way, 274 emails—that's fantastic. So I'm not saying this because I don't think that's enough. Enough is a relative term. The answer to your question is you just keep at it full throttle until you're getting the results that you want. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, what I ask myself with two boys is, you know, my kids are starving. How much would I do? How much would I try? I would do anything.
Right.
So within the law. And let's face it, you know, survival, you know, you get to a point where, you know, even that's flexible. But That's it. I mean, it just, it's not maybe the answer that you were hoping for, but at the end of the day, it's the clearest, simplest answer. You just keep going. See, here's the thing. Everyone's going to have a different path. Like, your path might require, you know, 400 total emails before you have enough work that you're actually, like, somewhat satisfied for now. Somebody else's path, I've coached people where, gosh, they didn't even get 10 warm emails out the door, and they were slammed. You know, what's the difference? Well, there are some differences. I look at patterns, and some of these patterns have to do with, you know, the quality of their network, their experience. But frankly, a lot of it was, I wouldn't say luck, the right place at the right time. It wasn't something you can replicate. Okay, so there's no rhyme or reason to it sometimes, but here's what I do know. Effort is kind of, effort will level the playing field. So keep going until you're satisfied. It's right now, prospecting is your full-time job.
Yes.
You know, I got laid off 16 years ago, 15 years ago, and to me, and I didn't even have kids then, but to me, there was no, I took a day off, and then from then on, it was like, you know, 8 to 6 every day. That's all I was doing. I was researching companies. I was looking for openings. I was tapping my network, and I was just, you know, doing whatever it took to find my next job, and it took about 6 weeks. But I have no doubt, had I not knocked on all those doors, it would have been months.
Right. And actually, I expected this answer. It was just the fact that there's still so much for me to learn, and I feel like I'm spending so much time prospecting that all of a sudden, when I do have work, I'm going to have to really figure out exactly how to do the white paper or the brochure or the case study or whatever it might be, since I started all this in January.
Yeah. No. Well, you know what? So that's a great point. Here's what you will find, Michael. You're not alone. Most people learn as they go. I know on paper it sounds like you should learn first and then knock on doors and then land work, and by then, of course, you'll know what to do because you've prepared, you've studied. That's not how it works. It's the equivalent of reading about golf, and you've never played before. You've been reading about it, and now you finally get to play. Now you finally get out there and hit the links. And
right.
Guess when the real learning happens? It's then. So the real learning will happen when you land that project. What you're looking for are people who are willing to give you that white paper project, that brochure project, that web copy project, based on what they see right now. They didn't care to look any further. They didn't care to look at maybe all your qualifications. They saw enough that they were willing to go with it. The price was low enough. They took a chance. And guess what? At that point, you're going to work your tail off figuring out how to best do this. First case study project I did, I spent almost 30 hours on it. It was crazy. But that's when because I had to figure out how to write it. Same thing with white papers. My first few white papers, there were no courses and no books. So it's a blessing in disguise, but that's when the real learning will happen. So don't worry about that part.
Okay. Well, I'm not too worried about the fact that I'll generate business. I'm very persistent, so I'll just keep going forward. There's no hesitation there.
There you go. Yeah, eventually you will land clients. And here's the cool part. It took me 6 months, Michael. So I want you to understand this is coming. This advice is coming from someone who there was no luck. I started prospecting in the fall of 2003, and between then, well, for the next few months, all I landed with a ton of effort, but I was basically throwing spaghetti at the wall, were a couple of jobs that were like, you know, $200-$300 each. I didn't consider those to be my first clients. That, to me, wasn't very satisfying. But then I started working with a coach, kind of like you guys are doing now, in February 2004. And I was working diligently with her and then building my business, getting it off the ground from February until, I want to say, it was August or September of that year. That's how long it took to land my first client, my first real client.
Right.
6-7 months. That's how long it took. Talk about getting discouraged. I mean, I had started the previous fall, no results. I kind of hit the reset button in February and worked my tail off for 6-7 months and finally get my first client. And, I mean, I'm just glad I didn't give up because once I got the first client, I started getting clients much more rapidly. It's like it started snowballing.
Right.
And I've heard similar experiences from others where, man, once it started happening, it just became a little easier.
Yeah, and I didn't expect that it would happen that fast. Essentially, I've been a recluse for a while and didn't have a strong network, so I figured I'd have to go out there and really put a lot of effort into it.
Yeah. I mean, I had an okay network, but I couldn't leverage most of them because I had my day job, and they knew about my day job, and I didn't really want to infringe on that.
Sure.
I had to be careful. So, man, just stay the course, you know, stay the course. You're doing the right thing. You're following the right plan. I really can't think of anything you should be doing differently. Because if there are some things, and there are a couple of things you could do out there, they're really going to take away from what you're doing now.
Okay.
And you're going to dilute your efforts, and then you're going to get poor results in all areas. So I'd rather you focus your time and energy continuing doing what you're doing now. And I'm glad you asked this because, you know, you're not alone. I mean, I know that there are some others out there right now in the group who are thinking the same thing. It's like, man, you know, how long do I have to keep doing this? And these are very legitimate questions.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for the support, too.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome, my friend. Good stuff. So, again, star two, if you got a question, I'll raise your hand, and let me just check the webcast. A couple of questions. All right, so first one came from Taylor, and Taylor says, wanted to let you know I sent a warm email to the corporate headquarters of a major real estate company, and I now have a phone call with them next week to discuss email marketing. Might be a big win. As for a question, do you have – well, first of all, Taylor, that's awesome. Congratulations. And I know that you've been struggling to get these first few wins like Michael. So, Michael, look, again, proof that you're not alone. So it's very encouraging to see that you're starting to see some results. So Taylor's question is, do you have any recommendations on books that we can read as we move forward? Books that we could read as we move forward. So I don't have any books that come to mind, you know, in terms of, oh, this you absolutely have to read this. My recommendation is not so much with books as it is just kind of stay on top of the business and developments and case studies and ideas and insights through a couple of different blogs. And I'll mention a couple that are, I think, must read. One is the Content Marketing Institute. They publish a blog that's fantastic. They do great research and you're going to stay on top of what's happening. You're going to keep that finger on the pulse of B2B marketing, content marketing. So that's definitely one. Joe Pulizzi, who runs that organization, has written several books on content marketing, I believe 3 different books. So check those out. Pulizzi is his last name, P-U-L-I-Z-Z. Just really good stuff. So if you're interested in the content marketing world, that side of copywriting, then there's lots of good stuff there. Marketing Profs, as in marketing professionals, marketingprofs.com is another great resource. And so is Marketing Sherpa, marketingsherpa.com. So Marketing Sherpa has several different newsletters, and you can select which ones you're interested in, definitely the B2B stuff. Email marketing would be another good one. Sounds like you're interested in email marketing. So I think if you do that, you will have enough to just kind of stay on top of things. And the only way that's going to happen is if you make it a habit of reading through these blogs and newsletters. For me, I find that just carving out some time every week on a certain time, in a certain day, that's the only way it's going to get done. Because if I try to do it sporadically throughout the week, it just doesn't get done. So schedule some time for that sort of thing. So that is there's a book that I think more about this really belongs in most of you guys' bookshelf if you're looking to do long form B2B projects or copy. And that is Gordon Graham's book, White Papers for Dummies. So it's not – obviously, if you're looking to write white papers, you must have that book. It really is a fantastic resource. The way I like to approach that book is to just kind of speed read it, skim through it when you get it so you understand what's in there and you get kind of the gist of how he approaches these projects and how he talks about white papers when talking to potential clients. But then put it on your bookshelf because the real benefit will come once you land a white paper, you can use it as a reference, as your guide. Okay, that's how I've used it. If you're interested in case studies, Casey Hibbard's book, Stories That Sell. Hibbard is H-I-B-B-A-R-D. Stories That Sell. Great stuff. It's on the full spectrum of case studies, not just on the writing part of them. Everything from using case studies as a marketing tool and all that. So really, not all of it will be applicable but to you as a writer, but it's good to know everything that goes into marketing with case studies. So you'll be able to have more intelligent discussions with your clients and prospects. So those two are very tactical, project-related books. And then the third category I wanted to mention is just kind of your classic copywriting books. You know, Scientific Advertising, David Ogilvy books, you know, anything you can get and you can find along those lines, and there's just so many of them. You know, you could just Google classic copywriting books and you'll find them. So that is just kind of the art of persuasion. Even if you're in B2B, it does come in handy. It's great to know. The book Influence, Cialdini, is a classic. So even if it's B2B, it's how do you persuade? And it's interesting, the science behind influence and persuasion. So that would be another one that just came to mind. So I think those three categories would be where I would be looking. So I hope that helps, Taylor. All right. And then also here in the webcast, Robert had a question or maybe a comment. I have a couple of ideas for articles that would provide useful information to marketing directors of high-tech firms. For instance, how to talk to an engineer. Do you have any ideas of venues I could place them? Yeah, well, I would say some of the ones I mentioned I think are worth pitching. Content Marketing Institute, Marketing Profs. But, you know, I would approach this a little differently. I would write the articles first, publish them as a blog post on my website or as a newsletter or both. In fact, here's what I would do specifically, just to give you a straight answer, Robert. I would start a newsletter. And before you actually launch it, have some articles ready to go, like 4 to 6 articles. It sounds like you already have some ideas. So have those articles ready to go, publish it once a month to start, and then a couple of weeks later, post it on your website as a blog. Same article, okay? Then I would, 2 or 3 weeks later, I would publish the same article in LinkedIn Publisher, okay? And what you're doing is you're exposing that material to a group of people who normally wouldn't know about you or wouldn't have been exposed to that article. Okay. And then is the fourth step. That's when I would try to find a home for it. So these are the ones I mentioned are kind of top tier publications. You could start there. If it were me, I would probably start in lower tier publications. It's just easier to get in the door. And I would be looking at publications that specifically target the market that I'm going after. Okay, so I think you're better off looking for smaller publications that where your prospects and clients are actually hanging out, or the publications they're actually reading. So I think it's going to be your best bet, but do it in that order. I think you're going to get a lot more benefit out of the content and much more exposure and momentum that you would, you know, pitching an idea to an editor and just getting rejected, because that's just the nature of the game. You get to pitch so many of them just to find a home for one of them. All right, so star two. Again, if you're on the phone and you have a question, you could raise your hand. I don't see any raised hands, so I'll just give you guys a little bit of time there. So while I'm waiting, I had another thought, and this is a little bit to Sharon's point from earlier. I'd love to support you guys through Get Better Clients Academy. Again, you get access to a coaching call, group coaching call every month. It's a great kind of safety net, if you will. When you're out there, I got people from all levels, people who are starting out, people who already have some clients. I've got freelance writers and copywriters who have been at it for a long time. They're very successful. You get access to a forum where you can ask questions and people chime in. You get great feedback. So it's really a wonderful resource. And, of course, I'm biased, but I really think it's a wonderful resource. However, there's something to be said for also kind of figuring it out on your own. You know, you're not always going to have access to someone instantly, right? So even if you have access to these resources, I encourage you to try new things. Just try them. You know, use good judgment and take some risk. The real growth happens when you do that. We all want access to that safety net. We all want access to instant feedback, but sometimes you're not going to have it. So don't be afraid to try new things. And you know, people ask me all the time, oh, you know, I just got contacted by this prospect. What do you think? Should I take this on? You know, I can't answer that for you. Only you can answer that. If you're thinking about not taking it on because you're scared, I would say if that's really the only thing holding you back, just take it anyway and figure it out. You know, you may not know. You may not have the experience to write this. If you're honest with yourself, do you think you can do it? Have you done other things that were equally challenging that you have to figure it out on your own? And the answer is probably yes. So you've done other things. You figured it out. Just say yes and figure it out later, you know? And I say that because from experience. Every big growth that I've had in my professional life has been because I said yes and then I figured it out. You know, later. Just make the commitment. Once you make the commitment, you're forced to make it happen, to figure it out. All right, let's see. Michael, you are on.
Hi, Ed. I thought I'd ask some more questions about prospecting.
Yeah.
You know, the the last lesson we had with the hidden gold, and I was looking at the areas of prospects because that's where I'm focusing my attention, and I've already started to look at finding hungrier markets, and I'm just trying to figure out what you think would be the best areas to focus on. I haven't thought about targeting agencies yet, but I definitely am looking at some other markets.
Yeah. So agencies, for your situation, might be something to seriously consider because agencies have a constant stream of work.
Right.
When you think about the agency business model, they have to bring in a steady stream of work in order to keep the lights on. And most of them don't have staff writers, so they're used to working with freelancers. And even if they have a go-to freelance writer or copywriter, that person may not be available at the time of it, whether it's because they have them on other projects or they're unavailable right now, they went on a maternity leave or whatever. So I think it's worth going after them because there's a good chance that they're already buying the services that you offer, as opposed to other types of prospects where you don't know. But with agencies, you know. It's like, I don't know, it's like trying to sell paper to a business. I mean, you know they're using paper, right? You just don't know where they're buying it from. So
right.
Now the trick with agencies and marketing firms is you can't just position yourself as just another writer. I mean, eventually that will work, right? Eventually you'll just find someone who has an immediate need right now and they don't have time to continue to look for other people or look for somebody else. Right place at the right time, you got lucky. But I wouldn't count on that. What I would do is I would go after agencies that seem to have clients in your areas of expertise. So, you know, commercial insurance and some other areas where you have some knowledge, if you position yourself as being that person who can come in and hit the ground running, that's huge for them. That's huge for them. So if they have clients in those areas, then that's going to make a big difference.
Okay. And is it just as simple as just Googling agencies and the insurance industry?
Yeah, I mean, so the way I would do it is, so when I did it, I would do B2B tech marketing agency, right? So in your case, I would do B2B insurance marketing agency. Let's see what turns
out.
Yeah, so I found several that are, you can tell they're optimizing for insurance marketing. But it, you know, the other way, so you could do that. I would start specific like that and adjust your search terms based on what you find. So if it's turning up, like my results turned up some agencies, but it also turned up some articles about insurance marketing and marketing to agents. So I would have to dig deeper to see, okay, are some of these agencies writing about insurance marketing in their blog or what? And I can kind of get in the back door that way.
Okay. Yeah, I did the same search, and I see what you're saying.
Right. So sometimes you'll find them, but it's based on content they published. And so you have to get in the door that way in terms of finding them. And you could also kind of back up a bit and maybe make it broader too. Let me try commercial insurance. Commercial insurance advertising agency. Yeah, so I found some in here that's unpromising. But some of these are, you could tell, are agents. So you just have to play around with the terminology and see what comes up.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, I just wanted to figure out which ones would be the best approach, because I've already started to look at other niches. And things like developing a loss leader and productizing some things that I haven't even written yet didn't seem to be appropriate for me right now, or to be the number two strategy, just looking at some of the other ideas for prospecting.
So here's a thought. Based on what you've shared with me so far, I don't think that what's going to give you success is trying other approaches and strategies. If it were me, I would just keep going at it using what you're already doing.
Okay.
Because you risk diluting your efforts.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing. There are companies and agencies right now looking for a writer like you. They just don't know you exist. So if you knock on enough doors, you're gonna find someone. But if you start, if you stop the knocking on doors and you do something else, then they're still there. But now you've abandoned ship. You're trying something else that may not turn up prospects. So. I would just keep knocking on doors, I think it's a great idea to add agencies to the mix. And by the way, with agencies, you want to contact the creative director.
Okay.
That's creative director or principal. So in many cases, some of these are very small agencies or firms, and they don't have like a separate creative director. One of the principals acts as the creative director. So if you don't find creative director, just contact one of the principals, and you know, that's your backup.
Okay. Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I cover all the bases.
Yeah. No, you're doing the right thing. And I like the agency idea.
All righty. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, and just let me see, which session was that? If you are interested in the whole going after agencies idea, I talk about that in session, I think it was session 9. Let me just double check. Yeah, session 9. So you'll see that's one of the strategies that I recommend in there. I tell you, it's been responsible for kickstarting a lot of B2B writers and copywriters businesses. So definitely something to keep in mind. Along those same lines, I don't want to discount the idea of partnering up with a couple of designers. So knocking on doors with some designers who focus on your target market. It may not turn up something as quickly as an agency might, but as I mentioned in session 9, it's a proven strategy. Long term, it's something that several people have built their businesses around. Peter Bowerman being one of the probably the most famous ones. So he's done really, really well by partnering with a couple of designers. And actually he's worked with several designers, but there's some that keep coming back. So, and he's got that ebook, which I linked to there in the handout. So check that out. If that's of interest to you, I would absolutely invest the $40 or whatever it is in that ebook, because it's very detailed, very tactical. He explains step by step how he did it, how he would do it, even if it were today, if he were starting today, in terms of partnering up with designers and the different approaches you could take, different ways to partner, how to pitch yourself to them. So if that's of interest, that is a very worthwhile resource. I don't make anything from that. I just I really believe in Peter's resources, and this is definitely a gold mine. All right, let's see. Robert had a question in the webcast. He says, there are roughly 150 firms in my target market that have U.S. subsidiaries for marketing and sales, but have their development and incorporation overseas. A couple of European countries account for most of them. I have been ignoring these once I figure out they're not a domestic firm. Do you think this is a mistake? If they have a U.S. marketing director, is that good enough? Do you have any ideas about how to deal with these types of companies? I would not ignore them, and here's why. First of all, I've actually had luck in the past getting clients that were not based in this country. They had a U.S. office or a U.S. subsidiary, but they were a European company. And one of my biggest clients of all time actually was a company from Denmark. And they had their U.S. office here in the Atlanta area, and through a very unexpected connection, I was able to get in the door there, and they're one of my favorite clients ever. Marketing was done there in Europe, but they needed marketing here in the U.S., and they had a bit of a crackerjack team here in the U.S., and I was able to work with those folks. So, couple of reasons. One is many of these firms will have marketing people in the U.S. as well as in Europe. Second reason is a lot of their marketing materials need to be Americanized, and they need the expertise of someone in this country to get it done. So even if they have people here, in many cases they may not have a writer. So I wouldn't let that keep you from contacting them. If there would be a good target for you, assuming everything else checks out, contact them anyway. And, you know, even if you can't find the information for the U.S., or even if they don't have a marketing department in the U.S., from what you can tell, I would still contact the marketing people in Europe. You really never know. Yeah, in fact, I think it was somebody in the group, and if I remember correctly, it was Taylor, who had posted in the forum that he came across a prospect who was very interested in getting help from him Americanizing some of their marketing materials. So it's very common. That's definitely a need. And what I find is, in most cases, it's not as easy as just doing some light editing. In many cases, the whole piece needs to be redone, and I can show the client why that's the case. I can make a very good case for why we need to basically start from scratch. Robert had a follow-up question in the webcast. He says, when I find several relevant names for a single company, such as VP of Marketing, Marketing Director, Director of Communications, et cetera, do you think it's better to contact them one at a time or all at the same time? It depends. It's a great question. I like to contact them in pairs. That's kind of my just general rule. I think it's easier and it's safer. If you try to do too many and they work closely together, it just looks like spam. Not spam, but it looks like you're just throwing, again, spaghetti at the wall. If you do it two at a time, it feels more surgical, more strategic, and well-played, better played. So that's the general rule. I try to do two at a time when I find eight different people who could be targets. But even then, I have a pecking order. So the way I prioritize is I start at the director or manager level. That's actually my best bet, just because these are the folks that generally are tasked with hiring outside help. once you get to the VP level, chief marketing officer level, these people will usually not hire a freelancer directly. They'll just send your information to one of their subordinates. So you're better off just starting out with the people you would be in contact with anyway. So in that example, just to use this as a hypothetical, VP of marketing, marketing director, director of communications. I would absolutely start with marketing director and director of communications. And let's say there were a couple others that had the title marketing and manager. Those two words were in the title, like digital marketing manager. That sort. Those would be my next set in my list, my next choices. And finally, it would be kind of the VP of marketing at that level. All right. So, again, if you have a question, star 2 on your telephone keypad raises your hand. One thing I'm going to make available to you guys, and I haven't done this yet just because I just published it, and I published it to the Get Better Clients Academy as one of the bonus resources, but I just created a PDF report with 24 new sources of – or I shouldn't say sources, 24 tools and resources for finding prospect email addresses. So I went through a few in the training here, B2B Business Launcher, in session 4 or 5, but I've found over the past couple of years several others, and many of these are new tools and new tricks and hacks, and I've compiled them into this PDF report. So I'm going to share that with you guys, and I'm probably, just to kind of keep things neat and tidy, upload it to the session on prospecting. And that way it's there. It's inside the training program, so it's in a natural place. And when you're reviewing that information, it's there where it probably should be. So I'll make sure Crystal puts that up there in the next few days, and look for it there. It's a great resource. All I ask is, you know, same thing with any of these resources, that you don't share them outside the group. I put a lot of time and effort into these. These are part of your benefits of being here and working with me, and I just ask that you keep them here for your own use. So let me write myself a note. Okay. All right. So this question from the webcast is from Taylor. He's asking, in a large corporation like one headquartered here in Fort Worth with dozens of marketing people in different marketing-focused departments like international marketing, product marketing, brand marketing, et cetera, is it better to just find one person to contact or contact several? Some of these can be tough because they have different divisions, and each division has, you know, let's say 6 different marketing people, and all the titles sound good, and they have 6 divisions. That would be, you know, 36 different potential prospects. So that can be tough. The way I try to narrow that down is, first of all, a lot of it, it's just gut feel, which is probably not the most reliable. But you can do a little better than that by using LinkedIn as a research tool. Just go to their profile, look each one of them up in LinkedIn, and read their description. And many times you'll know. I mean, if they start talking about, you know, a task with, you know, marketing communications and blah, blah, so that's a good prospect. That would be a good contact. And even if a lot of them have those types of descriptions, then that's fine. That's more people to contact. So I wouldn't look at that as a negative. I would just say, hey, yeah, here are a lot of people who could potentially hire me. And that's happened, by the way. All you need is just to get in the door with one of them. Once you're in and they like you and they like your work, it's a lot easier to get introductions to others. So that's just more possibilities, more potential doorways for getting into that to that organization. But yeah, use LinkedIn and see what you can find based on what their responsibilities are or what they're listing as their responsibilities. Yeah, great question. All right, I don't see any raised hands, so you're welcome to jump in if you have anything. If not, we can wrap up. But I'll give you guys another minute just in case. So I have a couple of parting thoughts. And this has been a great call because we've talked about some of this already in terms of, hey, effort. How do you decide how much effort? How much should I try? How much should I do? And hopefully I gave you an answer by just forcing yourself to ask the question and be honest with your answer, which is depends. How much is it worth it to you? How much are you willing to do? What do you have at stake here? So I hope that helped. The other thing is the in terms of prospecting and how much, and once you start getting work, one question that comes up is, how much should I do? How should I scale that back? And my answer is, once you have work, make sure that you're still doing a certain level of prospecting every week. It's very easy to kind of fall into the routine of or use the excuse of, well, I have client work now. I have to do this. And I'm book solid, so I don't need to prospect. My general rule of thumb is 10% of your work week should be dedicated to some sort of marketing. It could be working on some of your inbound marketing stuff. You know, it could be working on content marketing, such as writing an article for a newsletter that you're going to launch. That counts. But don't get out of the habit of doing some sort of marketing activity, self-marketing activity every week. And I think 10% is a good rule of thumb as a minimum. So if you're putting 40 hours a week into your business, we're talking about 4 hours a week. You know, that's not a lot. That's 1 hour a day, Monday through Thursday. And I think that's reasonable. Or if you prefer to just kind of dedicate an afternoon to it on a Thursday, then that's fine too. And I think that's doable even when you're book solid. I know sometimes you'll fall behind and you're on deadline and things are crazy. I get it. You know, if you miss a week, the world's not going to fall apart. Just make sure that those are exceptions and it doesn't start becoming a new trend. So that's something that comes up a lot at that point. And then finally, I would say that, look, I've given you the tools and the frameworks to get going, but everyone's going to follow a different path. Here's what I can guarantee you. Your path is going to look very different from what you first expected. So, like, when I remember when I started this, and pretty much everyone I've coached this process agrees with me later, months later, once they look back. When I started this process, I thought it was going to look a certain way. I was going to get certain types of clients, and I was going to be doing this kind of work, and things were going to look this way. But, you know, once I started actually landing the work and doing this work, it looked differently, you know, and suddenly opportunities came to me that maybe weren't quite aligned with what I thought I'd be doing, but they made sense, so I took them. I had a coaching client from a couple of groups ago who finally started getting some results, and one of the results she got was with a company that made, I want to say it was bunk beds. It was something really odd, but they wanted to hire her as a full-time consultant and even have a small equity stake in the company to be kind of their marketing person. Now, she had a little bit of a background in marketing, but it wasn't huge. but she did really good work for them, and they just felt that she was somebody they wanted to have on their team. And, you know, she took the opportunity. Now, I haven't been in touch with her for a while, but these are the kind of things that will come up, okay? And my suggestion is, look, be open to any possibilities. You never know where this business will lead you. I mean, in my case, I never planned to be a coach. I never planned to start an e-learning company, which is essentially what I have here. It just kind of evolved. So, but it's something that I really, really enjoy. I tell people all the time, if I were financially independent, I would do this for free. So that's why I know I'm on the right path. So as opportunities come along, be open to them. You never know what's going to come your way. And just make sure that it's something that really gets you excited. That's always the key. You never know where your next client's going to be, who they're going to be, or what kind of work they're going to have for you. And sometimes you thought you were going to do white papers and case studies. And next thing you know, you're doing all email marketing and landing pages, you know, for B2B companies. Who knows? Just be open to these possibilities. Try to be a little flexible, especially at the beginning, because something that may not look like a good possibility now, like something that would be interesting, could be what leads you to a lot of really cool and interesting things down the road. So another question. Yeah, okay, cool. There are a couple of questions here. Somebody was having trouble with the raise hand function. It wasn't working for them. Sorry about that. So *2 is the command, but if it's not working, I apologize. So here's my question. #1, would you please expand on how to find the foreign markets? First of all, the question wasn't how do you find foreign markets. The question is, if you were looking for potential prospects and you see that company XYZ is based out of Denmark, you know, should you pursue them? And the answer was, yeah, possibly, as long as you think they'd be a good fit based on what you're seeing. So it wasn't so much how do you find these companies. I wouldn't necessarily go after foreign companies just for the sake of going after foreign companies. I'm not sure what the benefit of that would be, unless you're thinking, well, yeah, but I want to find companies that want to Americanize their content. But even then, the best way to find them is to, once you determine what your target market is, start researching companies in that target market. As you come across some that are overseas, then look at those individually. I think that's, you're better off doing it that way than to purposely look for companies in your target market that are overseas. And then another question about fear. I'm usually a sort of jump in and figure it out person, but in the computer age, where my mistakes not only never die, but can pop up at the most inopportune time, isn't it risky to take on work we don't have experience in? Even with our best efforts, the work may be below par, and then our reputation is forever vulnerable to that earlier effort. So you would think that would be the case. Now, look, it depends on what kind of effort you put forth. So I can't really speak to – I can't say, oh, well, you know, you're going to be fine. I know that I can find out how to do certain things. So I may know the basics of case studies, for instance, and that's what happened to me with pretty much any project that I did. I knew the basics. I kind of understood, knew what it was. I'd never written one before. I had an opportunity to write some case studies for a company. I said, absolutely, no problem. I had already been writing some brochures for them, so they already trusted me, and that's why they didn't probe as deeply as maybe somebody else, because they already loved my work. And what they did is they referred me to the person in the company who was in charge of case studies, and we went out to lunch, and he told me, here's what I got. Here's what we've been doing. We've been giving them to our marketing agency. They don't do a really good job with them. You know, is this something you're interested in? I said, absolutely. I'd love to do it. He says, well, here's what we're paying them. Can you do it for that much? And it was $1,100. I said, no problem. So was I afraid? Yes. But I knew I could learn how to do them. And that's why I spent nearly 30 hours on my first one, on something that should have taken maybe 8 or 10 hours, because I wanted to make sure I was doing it right. It's not hard to reverse engineer many of these projects and figure it out, or to reverse engineer and use other supplementary information such as articles, books, courses. For instance, I mentioned Gordon Graham's book on white papers. You can figure it out with the resources you have today. Most of these projects, you can figure it out. Even a web copy, I really didn't have any kind of formal training on writing web copy. That one is a little bit harder, because the way I learned was by looking at a bunch of different sites, and I'm talking hundreds of B2B technology company websites, and just looking for patterns. What did I like? What didn't I like? What are the better ones doing? What do they have in common? How are they organizing the information? And I took a ton of notes. I mean, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how this stuff was working and why they were doing it the way they were doing it and why they were writing the copy the way they were. I was willing to put in that time. And once I did it, I was confident that I was producing good work. So, I would never recommend just saying, okay, well, I'll just do my best, and doing a half-hearted effort at the research and trying to figure it out. That's obviously going to put you at risk. But if you spend enough time and energy and attention trying to figure it out, then I think chances are pretty good that you'll do at least a decent to good job. It may not be outstanding, but it'll at least be a good job. And in terms of looking back, I mean, I think it's just natural. We'll always look back at our earlier work and cringe in a way, because, you keep getting better. I think that's natural. So I wouldn't worry about that part. I think you'll always grow. I look back at my writing from just a few years ago and say, man, I wasn't that great. I could do better today. But that's okay. At the time, that was where I was. That was my best stuff. It doesn't mean I was cheating the client or cheating myself. It's just the way it works. All right. Let's see. This question is from Sandy. She says, how often do you negotiate the job payment offers? I'm currently reading The Secrets of Power Negotiating from Roger Dawson. Great book, makes you think about everything differently. Yeah, I agree, right? That's such a powerful book. I actually I bought the tape series from Nightingale Conant back in 1999 or 2000, right before I was going to negotiate salary and compensation with a new employer. In my story, man, it's just from going through the tapes, which is really the book, but on tape. Just from doing that and learning a few of the strategies, I was able to improve my compensation by, it was like 20%. It was huge, especially at the time. I really needed that. So this is good stuff. So how often do you negotiate the job payment offers? Well, first of all, I never say this is all negotiable. What I do is I just state my payment terms. So here's the deal. Here's the dollar amount. It's $5,000. Here's what it includes. And here are the payment terms. And the payment terms I always ask for are, first of all, 50% up front for the first project with a new client. And this is, by the way, in under Session 7, where I include my fee agreement, and I explained all my terms there. You guys can go through that in more detail. But 50% up front on the first project for a new client. The second 50% I will invoice 1 week after submitting the initial draft, and that payment is due in 15 days. And it's interesting, when that's the way you put it, I find that more than half of my clients will just go ahead and pay it within 15 days. The other half, they take somewhere between 30 and 45 days. But my thinking is, if you don't ask for 15 days, you'll get it in 30 or 60. So I asked it for 15, and many of them pay in 15, and then the others pay in 30 or 45. So might as well just ask for what you want and negotiate with those who want to negotiate or whatever, then to ask for something safe, because whatever you ask for, that's going to be the anchor point. So how often do I do it in terms of, I mean, I'm assuming the question, Sandy, is how often do I get a client who disagrees or wants to counter offer? Not that frequently. And if you have the discussion on that kickoff call where you talk about money, where you talk about a ballpark figure, you're asking for a budget, it becomes a lot easier once you submit your fee agreement, because you've already had the money discussion and it's not going to be a big surprise. So I find that that really takes a lot of the pressure off you when you submit the quote and them being scared or blown away by your price, because they already have a really good idea of what your numbers are going to be. Okay. So again, star two if you have a question, or if you're on the webcast, you can always just type it in. All right, I don't see any other questions, so we'll go ahead and wrap up. And again, guys, so you'll get a couple of emails here over the next week from Crystal. We're going to move you guys over to the alumni forum. Also going to send you some information on the Get Better Clients Academy, where you can get continued support from me. And it's not just the group coaching calls. You get some excellent condensed training every month on a very, very specific topic. There are already some outstanding execution plans there. An execution plan is essentially a mini training on something very, very specific. It's very actionable. By the time you're done with it, you can run with it, you can deploy it, and have it generating results. So I got six of them already. One is going live next week, so we'll have seven. Anything from direct mail prospecting to starting and launching an effective newsletter to developing a powerful lead magnet for your freelance business. So there's some very specific information there, and you'll basically have an opportunity to try it for 30 days and see what you think. There's no risk to you, but I just know that if you try it, you're going to love it. So we'll send some information on that next week. So guys, with that, listen, keep at it. You guys are on the right track. Keep doing what you're doing. Don't give up. It's been a pleasure working with each and every one of you, and I look forward to seeing your successes and hearing about your journey here in the freelance copywriting journey. So have a great rest of the day, and hopefully we'll talk again real soon. Take care.